Tune in for an exclusive and permanent deal just for you. Get ready to immerse yourself in nature with an ongoing offer of 20% off all Strawberry Cough feminized cannabis seeds, exclusively designed for our valued podcast listeners. When you head over to homegrowncannabisco.com and use code COUGH20 at checkout, that's COUGH20. It's time to embrace the power of nature and embark on a growing experience like no other. Hey, what up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Grow Weed at Home with me, Kyle Cushman. I have a friend with me today, Mr. Jay Kitchen.
Hey, everybody, what's going on? Welcome to Southern California. You should be saying that to me, right? Good to see you, B.
Welcome to Southern California.
Thank
Mr.
you.
Mr. Oregonian.
Washington.
Mr. Washingtonian.
Pacific Northwest.
And to be specific, yes, it's not the D.C. variety. It's the actual place with trees.
Right, lots of trees.
Yes, on the West Coast here. So, welcome here.
Thank you very much, brother. Thank you for coming. It's been a while.
We enjoyed ourselves a nice little breakfast. It's early morning here.
Yeah, Kyle's an excellent chef.
Oh, thank you.
Excellent.
I wasn't fishing, but thank you anyways.
And the herb that you provided earlier was even better. That definitely accentuated the flavor of the eggs that you made.
Yes.
Really tasty, people.
My first harvest with Organics Alive. So my vegan organic new go-to. And we smoked a little doggone sour.
Yes.
Yeah, so a little doggone sour.
Definitely put the droop in my eyelids.
To commemorate our old friend, Subcool.
Subby. May he rest in peace.
We're both good friends of Subcool. And this is, so if you guys don't know here, let me give you a little background on Jay here. So Jay is just, he's an emissary of cannabis, basically, in my eyes.
Thank you. Evangelist.
Although you'd never know it, he's a little older than me. And he's been traveling the world a little bit longer than me. And he's met virtually every single cannabis dignitary and notable personality that I've met. Right. And he's written a couple of books. The first one's called The Kitchen.
Right.
And how did you describe that? That was an ode to the
plant? So, The Kitchen, which I grew, and I got to give a big shout out to my gromie, Uncle Tweezy in New York. He's been a great help to me in a lot of things, not just with cannabis, but in any event. We had a garden together up in Spanish Harlem. We were running four rooms at the time, and we decided, I like to do photography, and we did a love letter to the plant. We highlighted 20 strains that we grew over 2 years, and how we grew them in a weird sort of a way, a little hydroponics. And we kind of put forth our philosophy and whatnot. And then in the last couple of years, during the pandemic, we wrote the Cannabis Annual 2022, which is really all things cannabis. It's our love letter to the community.
Dude, this thing is so visually amazing.
Thank you.
I mean, but it's not just a picture book.
No.
There are stories in here about Subcool, Frenchie Cannoli.
We've got Dank Duchess does a whole article about making and smoking aged hash.
Franco?
I believe there's a picture of Frank in there, but you know, greenhouse, they just never gave me any.
Jack Herrer.
Yep. A lot of cannabis people. Yep.
So intertwined in all these photos, you'll learn and read really good stories about all of our cannabis heroes and all of our cannabis forefathers. And so I'm not a big book guy, although I have a big bookshelf with lots of memorable books.
I suspect those are all your wives, but you know.
This is one of them, so I just really
want to. Well, there's also, you know, in the book, the interesting thing is, we sort of cover the three eras of cannabis, like pre-prohibition, where cannabis was used in medication by Eli Lilly, Park Davis, and there's a cannabis museum in Akron, Ohio, I believe, of all places, or somewhere in Ohio. Don Wertschaffer, who's a lawyer, has all this medical memorabilia.
How's Donnie? Is he still around these days? I haven't talked to Don in almost 10 years.
Yeah.
Remember the last Hemp Fest I went to like 6-7 years ago.
Oh, gosh. I was there.
And then we got
Prohibition movie posters, you know, from a friend of mine who runs a movie poster gallery. And then we talk about what's going on, how the cannabis industry has changed. When you and I were coming up, and you were a little bit more public about it because you worked for High Times. I was a practicing lawyer and a judge.
I didn't really have a choice. I was like growing weed for 8 years. And I'm like, look, I can do this for the rest of my life, probably end up in jail. But then when I got offered this, like, I'm like, you know what? I'll stop doing that for a little while. I thought I was going to become a journalist, a retired journalist, but you don't make no money. The starving journalist acronym is true.
There's
no money there. So
a stereotype that rings true. So, I mean, we grew up in Prohibition. I mean, I got busted for cannabis in 1973, 50 years ago this month.
Yeah, so think of this guy. So he's a district court judge.
I was an administrative law judge in the South Bronx.
Okay, so think of Harry Anderson by night. You remember Harry Anderson from night court. And then by day, I had this analogy all set up in my head. I actually really did.
Well, I would drive to my grow on the way to my office. And I would tend to the plants, and I would smoke a joint. Uh-huh. And then I'd go sit and hear cases. Now, most of the cases you hear as an ALJ where I was were pro se. In other words, people would represent themselves. So you got to meet all kinds of people.
So plenty of judges take their Prozac in the morning.
Exactly.
They take their freaking Adderall. Who the hell knows? Everybody takes their thing. So, that, you know...
Listen, I was one of the most productive judges in my unit for a long time. So
Jay's been around, and he's made these really, really cool books. Yeah. So if you're looking something to really just be able to go through again and again.
Well, they're meant so you keep turning the pages.
Right. Yeah, man.
You keep turning the pages. And the current book is 400 pages.
Which, I find myself looking at it, you know, just picking it up and
reading
10 pages and then putting it down and then... flipping through it again.
So. And we actually have a condensed version of it, which unfortunately I forgot to bring with me, but it's about half the size, and people can contact me if they want to get a copy of it at Uptown Grow Lab at Jay Kitchen. Jay Kitchen, Uptown Grow Lab.
Ugh. Excuse me for stepping on you. Say that again.
If people are interested in the softback version, which is considerably cheaper, hit me up at jay@uptowngrowlab.com.
So and I was going to smoke joint. My bong, but this is smoking really good.
This is very nice.
Isn't that nice?
What is it?
It's a one week cure. The Cherry Lopez is originally was a strawberry cough to the Russian Kush, and that gave me the Cherry the Lopez and the Candy Lopez and the Sour Lopez. So it's basically just a single cross of the strawberry cough.
Nice. Now, since we're talking about curing and all good stuff, tell us how did you cure this?
Well, that's the topic of our good segue. Maybe I'll have a sidekick, you know?
There was a reason.
While we're sitting here talking, maybe we should talk about the topic of the show.
Just saying, something to talk about,
and
right?
Curing, right, is a really important thing. And you know, what did I used to say? You know, as much time as you spend, money, and your resources putting into growing the weed, you should never rush the dry and the cure. You should spend as much effort and perfection as you possibly can on the dry and cure. Don't you agree?
I think the main, people ask me, you know, what about advice for about growing weed? I'm a little incoherent at the moment because of this weed. But it's patience. Cannabis teaches you patience. And, you know, there's a great breeder, Simon from Sirius Seeds, and he has a classic strain, the Chronic. Now, the Chronic is, a lot of people like the Chronic because it doesn't smell. It's good for urban growing. It smells like flowers.
Really?
It smells like flowers.
Interesting.
Very floral. But if you don't cure it properly, it loses all scent. It disappears. It has a light floral mango kind of scent when it's cured properly. But if you rush it or, you know, let it sit in wetness too long, it destroys this. You still get high from it, but it's got
So good weed like this will keep burning. It won't go out.
Yes.
You know, like it won't burn forever.
You don't have to keep relighting
it,
though.
But it will burn for a long time. And the other thing that keeps weed burning for a long time is a low heavy metal count. Because as the
You don't like to see black ash?
Right. You know, heavy metals obviously burn at a higher temperature. And so as it gets cooler and cooler and cooler and you reach that extinguishing temperature, when you take the heavy metals out, the combustion temperature is much lower.
Right.
So the cherry keeps cooling and cooling and cooling, but it doesn't extinguish. So I can keep taking, I can take a hit off of this 3 minutes after I've been talking.
Yeah. It's a wonderful thing. I mean, I used to smoke cigars and you'd have the same sort of thing. The ember would smolder and it's like hash, right?
That also has to do with the cure. So let's get into the nitty-gritty a little bit. So the definition of curing, not a technical definition, my definition is, first off, you have to dry properly before you can cure. If you don't dry properly, you cannot cure the weed. You cannot. It's a zero-sum game. If you have improperly dried the weed or you, if you attempt to cure 100% dry weed, or if you attempt to dry wet weed, you cannot cure. You can't
you're bound
cure
to
it
fail.
Somewhat. You can't cure it a little bit. You can't cure it at all.
Yeah.
All you're doing it with dry weed in a jar is aging it.
Or if you drop something in there to rehydrate it to roll it so it doesn't turn to powder while
and
you're
rolling. And rehydrated weed does not cure.
Correct.
Okay?
Correct.
Because in order for the weed to cure, you have to have the gases and the compounds
yeah.
within the weed that helps, and the enzymes that convert the chlorophyll.
Right.
So.
It's the same thing with tobacco, cigars,
exactly.
Same sort of thing.
Exactly. So it's a slow process.
It's an aging process.
So once you've dried the weed properly, curing, the definition of curing is to continue the drying process at such a slow rate that it doesn't fully dry out.
Mm.
What happens is all those pretty trichomes that stand straight up when we first harvest it, they kind of
those sex organs wilt.
They wilt. And they melt together. And without pressing them or touching them, they create this layer on the outside of the flower that creates a protective barrier so that the weed much more slowly oxidizes. And
the chemical conversions are taking a slower amount of time, right?
Exactly. And cured weed, the interesting thing is you can take weed that has been cured, expertly cured, for a long amount of time, 6 months, a year. I've even seen two-year cured weed.
Wow.
And you take it out, and it's the same consistency as it was when you put it in the jar. And the trick about ultra-cured weed is you don't want to smoke it right when it comes out of the jar.
Right.
You actually want to let it sit.
It's like a scotch.
Right, you got to let it air.
Or a fine wine,
you gotta
red
let
wine.
It air for a little bit.
It's got to breathe.
But weed that hasn't been cured, like weeds that just been thrown in a jar, and if you throw that and let that sit out for a couple of hours, what happens? It turns to dust.
It smells like chlorophyll.
Right.
It feels very
green. So now that we've described why,
now and comes the how.
How? Now we got to talk about how. So.
And everybody does this a little bit differently.
Right.
It's almost I hesitate to use the word art form, but it's a skill. It's a
curing
certain skill set.
Is an art. Any monkey can grow cannabis. Curing is an art form. Curing is 10 times as hard as growing.
Absolutely. And you can grow, like you were saying off camera before, you can have a beautiful grow, and if you screw up the cure, it doesn't matter. You know, it can look as high time centerfold friendly as anything, but it's not going to smoke that great.
And the funny thing is you can screw up the cure, and the weed will still get you really stoned. It'll just taste like you're smoking the bottom of someone's gym locker.
Oh, gosh. Or cardboard.
Right? Okay, so...
A lot of smoke out of this little joint.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah. Now, continue, sir.
So, jars. Hand-down jar glasses, the best thing to cure in.
And mason jars forever.
Absolutely. Mason, Bell,
yeah,
ball jars.
The vacuum-sealed jars.
Right, exactly. And, you know, back in the day when we started curing, we didn't have any, not only humidipacks.
We had nothing.
We had
paper bags.
We didn't even have a hygrometer, which is a fancy word for a thing that measures humidity, people, right? Right? We didn't even have a humidity thing that we could stick inside a jar, because they were all this big. Right? You know, unless you spent $300.
Yeah.
You know? So it was all by eye.
Yeah.
It was all by eye, all by touch, all by feel.
Yeah.
And that is the best way to get to know something. Because if you don't start with that and all you're using is a meter, well, then what are you really learning?
The data is great, but cannabis really wants you to work with her. As weird as that may sound and cult-like.
So what you want to do is you want to start off with the touch and the feel and the smoke test,
mm-hmm.
right? So you're going to hang your weed in as close to a perfect environment as you can get, which nowadays is turning out to be a really chilly
environment.
It's
problematic. It's
right?
problematic. I grow in the PNW, the summertime, and I hang dry.
Pacific Northwest.
I cut my plants whole at the base and hang the whole plant upside down.
Mm. Of course.
In my garage.
Of course.
The problem is, in the summer,
they
it's
don't
too hot.
Dry.
Well, they cook.
Right.
In the winter, it'll take 6 weeks to dry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, an ideal kind of climate, and I think this is one of the questions that's asked. Ideal climate, 60-60 is what I like to say. Temperature and humidity.
Right. So if you can't get the humidity down below 70%, the weed will never dry. it'll just stay wet forever and ever and ever and ever.
Yeah.
Unless you put it in the sun.
Don't want that.
Don't do that. So look, we all have appliances nowadays. If you're growing your weed, you've got appliances. So that means you have a dehumidifier. You probably have a stand-up air conditioner.
Yeah.
Okay? So that's what you do. So you either use your tent, which is what I do, and then I just set my parameters with my dehumidifier.
A tent growing or drying makes a whole lot more sense.
Or a bedroom. You put up your stringers in your bedroom, and you move your appliances in there.
My wife will approve.
So let's set up the parameters for where you do and you don't have to set anything up. Because like I here in L.A., during fall here, we get 40, 50% humidity, natural, and it's literally almost perfect.
Yep.
I really don't have to do anything because by the time you contain the stuff in a room, the humidity rises, I still have to dehumidify.
Yeah. Wow.
It's really nice.
Yeah.
So if you're anywhere in the mountains or anywhere in the, you know, you have any elevation, you've got a 40% humidity or anything like a nice ambient humidity, you don't have to worry about humidity.
Right.
I mean, you're not going to humidify because the plants are going to off-gas.
But it's like you were saying, it's challenging.
It is challenging. So, but if you're in the desert and you want to dry weed and have it taste any good, you're going to have to humidify your room to around 60%.
Yep.
Okay, 60 to 65% is the norm. I like to start off a little higher humidity. Now, when I say humidity in the room, that's the humidity once the plants start off-gassing, not the ambient humidity.
Okay.
So
you got to wait a little bit.
Exactly. So you put it in there, set your humidifier, and...
And the humidifiers today probably have an app that you can apply, so you can do it remotely, right?
I think what I'm getting at is, in the beginning, because I'm getting stoned now, too, I'm actually getting pretty high now, too, is in the beginning, I let the humidity be a little bit higher.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
And all I really want to do is, I want to remove the excess humidity from the room.
Yes.
I don't want to suck humidity from the plants. So that's a balance.
Yep.
That's almost like VPD. Okay?
Yep.
So you want to turn your dehumidifier up depending on what the ambient humidity is in the room, which is going to be controlled by both the ambient humidity and the off-gassing of the plants.
And
so if I have 100 plants in a small room, there's going to be more humidity that I need to remove from the room than if... So it's not as simple as just setting it at 65% sometimes.
You really have to learn your space.
Right.
You know, usually for me, it took me about... a half a dozen, well, about four times, four runs.
Still didn't go out.
To learn my space. Well, that's pretty amazing. And, you know, it's a trial and error thing a lot of the times, the curing, but, you know, it's critical.
So temperature, the temperature that you don't need to fuck with is if your temperature is anywhere within, 65 to 75 degrees.
If it's below 70, you're good.
75 is not optimal, certainly, but... If you can air condition the room, then great. But, you know, I've smoked plenty of weed that I cured up in Mendo without air conditioning my room.
Exactly.
That was dried in the summertime at 75
degrees. Just hanging from the roof, right?
So you just pull it down a little bit earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So the trick is all about when you decide to buck it and then ultimately trim it. So 7 to 10 days hanging. Okay.
That sounds about right.
Might be 12 days.
Sometimes in the PNW, it's 2 months.
Might be 2 months. See, that's dried and cured all in one step.
Well, because, you know, my
No, for real.
Yeah.
A lot of the outdoor growers up in Northern California and the Pacific Northwest, they have so much weed. You think that they're going to sit around and go through all these different steps of pulling it and bucking it and putting it in a container and trimming and then putting it in jars. No. They hang it in barns that are built in a specific spot on the property.
Right.
Right?
Yep.
That don't get the sun.
It's like the Cuban
thinkers. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And they cure the weed. They hang it for 2 months, and then it's done.
Yeah.
They pull it down, and you trim it. And basically, it's going to have just the right amount of moisture left in there that once you start chopping it up and trimming it, and now it starts to air a little bit, and you get it in the bag, and you burp it a couple of times,
and you're ready to go.
Yeah.
That is the beauty of the Pacific Northwest in the wintertime. But, yeah, and my benchmark is, you know, if one of the smaller twigs cracks, because usually there's still some moisture left. Now, my problem is I've got a lot of stuff going on, and I have plants that are hanging in my garage, and they're going to be all dried out. That's not what you want to do.
It's all timing. So let's say I got my tent, and I got 15 plants, and they're coming down, and I know it's going to take me and my wife and a friend or so, it's going to take us 4 days to trim all that stuff. Okay?
Time consuming.
So what I do is, when I buck it down, back to the smoke test. So
okay.
7 to 10 days hanging. And then what you do is you take a nice nug from about the middle of the plant somewhere.
Hmm.
Okay? You always hang your plants whole, cut off all the fucking, anything with a stem, you cut off.
Yeah.
Anything that's attached to the bud, you just let it dry on. Okay? So now you take a node and you crack it. You attempt to remove it from the stem. And if it separates well and doesn't give you that string of hemp,
yeah,
then you've probably gone a little bit too far.
Yep. You don't want it to snap clean off.
Right.
If it does that,
right,
you have an issue.
Because like I said, I'm giving a couple of days to get that all trimmed up.
Mm-hmm.
So what you want to be able to do is you want to be able to buck that down, put it into Tupperware containers, and put the lid on, that you can regulate over the next couple of days.
The off-gassing and what gets
so,
in. Because you don't want them in the containers and they get mold. You have to be careful for that.
If you can moisture. Only close off a flower that is actually ready for smoking. Okay?
Thank you.
If there's more moisture in there than you can, so you take that nug and you take it. Now you trim it up a little bit over in the ashtray. And then you're not going to be able to grind that nug.
No.
If you can grind it, it's definitely
done.
So what you're going to do is you're going to scissor it. You're going to scissor up that joint. It's going to be wet and sticky. And you're going to put it in a joint, and you're going to light it. And if that joint stays lit, like the one we did, mm-hmm. Look, this one's still lit.
Yeah, it's still smoldering. No, the one that's in the, it's still going strong. It's really a great smoke, too.
If it stays lit, and you then it's good to go, and it's ready to be put in those containers so that you can trim it over the successive days with a corner of it peeled to let it continue to off-gas. So now, instead of allowing the air to continue to drying it, you've slowed down the drying to a slow off-gas.
And that's what you want.
And what you do is, after about 12 hours, you're going to put your nose real close to that and make sure you don't smell any ammonia or any degradation of the original smell of the flower. Because if you do, you just take the lid off and let it completely air dry.
Yep.
And
I have a friend who used to
dry. Ready for my technique? This is what I do. I tell people, when you first learn to cure, you buy a flat of those little jelly jars. The ones that are only like 4 ounces. They're about 2 inches high.
Oh, you're talking to the little tiny jelly jars?
Mm-hmm. And
great for travel.
Break up your harvest so that it's all trimmed and manicured into small pieces, no stem, and put it in those jars. You get 24 of them in a flat or 12?
I think 24.
Will hold probably, depending on the weed, 4 or 5 grams.
Yeah.
Placed in there properly.
You could squish in a quarter ounce. You could squish in 7 grams.
When you're curing, you don't want to squish.
Right.
You want to leave a little bit of air, a little bit of oxygen to exchange.
You put a quarter ounce.
So
you know,
you're using jars, if you have a lot, you don't need to leave 2 inches in the top of the jar. The space in between the buds is enough. There is oxygen in there.
Drop them in gently.
Just exactly. And give a little shake and fill it up there and close it. And so what I say is use the little jars, because you can wait just 24 hours, grab one of those little jars, and you crack it, and you put it right up near your nose, and you smell it. And if you smell candy, you're good to go.
If you smell the
slightest hint of ammonia, that means that you jarred it too early.
Yeah.
You got to open everything up, dump it out, and dry it completely.
Yeah.
You dry it until it's dry, you're not curing that weed.
You're either smoking it or cooking with it.
You missed your mark. So that's why a lot of people, when they cure, they'll begin to cure in like paper bags.
Yep.
So they'll line a paper bag.
I mean, that was the old school
with a plastic
way.
Bag. You know, plastic bag rolled down to the bottom. The weed goes in there so all the trichomes don't stick to the bag.
Right.
And then you have the top of the bag, which you can fold down and close up
and
regulate the air, and you breathe
it's a wonderful device.
Half a pound of weed or 3/4 or maybe, and you breathe it.
A nice amount.
Until when you squeeze the flower, you got to finger fuck it a little bit, okay? Because you can't just keep smoking buds. Well, you can.
You can, but
you got to squeeze that bud so that as it crunches and it gives, you still feel a spring.
There's a little bit of moisture in there. It's malleable.
But it's almost at that point where you could crumble that bud, put it in a grinder, and break it up. Because then when you jar that bud, that last little bit of moisture, which only exists basically in the center,
stem, 15%,
it's going to redistribute, and then that's what's going to give you your cure.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun!
Are you ready to take your cannabis cultivation game to the next level? Well, hold on to your buds, because we have an amazing offer just for you. Are you familiar with Strawberry Cough? This legendary strain has delighted cannabis enthusiasts worldwide with its mouthwatering flavor and uplifting effects. Lineage? Sure, let's dive into it. Strawberry Cough is a delicious cross between Strawberry Fields and Haze. Its distinct strawberry aroma and sweet taste make it a favorite among connoisseurs. Now, here's the exciting news. We're offering a fantastic deal on Strawberry Cough feminized cannabis seeds. You'll receive 20% off your purchase on any pack size of these seeds when you use code COUGH20. That's COUGH20. That's COUGH20 at homegrowncannabisco.com. Don't miss out on this incredible opportunity to grow your own Strawberry Cough. Whether you're a seasoned cultivator or a newbie looking to explore the world of marijuana horticulture, these feminized seeds will set you on the path to aromatic success. Visit homegrowncannabisco.com today and select from their wide range of premium cannabis seeds, and maybe take advantage of 20% off your Strawberry Cough seeds when using code COUGH20. Happy growing, folks. Get ready to savor the tantalizing flavors and uplifting effects of Strawberry Cough, a strain that deserves a spot in every cannabis enthusiast's garden. Check out homegrowncannabisco.com now and seize this offer before it's gone.
All right, I'm ready. You ready?
I am.
This is the fun part. My favorite part is answering questions. Cool.
I'm game.
So the first question is from Derek Seaborn. A newbie grower asks, he must have wrote newbie grower. It's not like a designation, right?
I hope not.
You have to check a box.
It's like master grower, right? I mean, right. Give me a break.
It's multiple choice.
Could you share the optimum temperature and humidity levels for drying cannabis? I think we can. I'm concerned about mold and want to be sure I'm doing it right. Optimum temperature and humidity levels for drying cannabis?
I mean, I've seen professional houses do it at 60-60 humidity and temperature. You can vary it between those numbers, like we were talking earlier in the show. As Kyle was talking about, you have a higher humidity, that's okay. You can start out 70, 72 and bring it down slowly.
I like 65. And then the reason why you can go lower than that, if it's 45% ambient humidity, right. You know, if you don't bring it down to 45 in the room for the last day or so,
right.
You know, it's all your personal preference. What are you doing with it next? Is it going right into a jar, or is it going to sit down on a table and have to be processed for a week, right?
Yep. And it is very personal. Everybody does it differently. Everybody grows weed differently.
And that temperature, you know, 10 years ago, nobody dried weed at 60 degrees.
No.
Okay? It was 68, 70.
Or it was on a screen with a fan blowing over it.
But even when we controlled it. So, you know, the optimal is definitely, I would say 65 is or below. If you go below, you're going to take a long time. It's just as simple as that.
You don't want to go lower than
60 degrees.
Yeah, you really don't, because
that is the low right there. You go below that, and you're really going to slow down the whole metabolic conversion.
The breakdown.
Yeah. So I would say for the average person, it's probably, for me, it's 62, 62.
And, you know, you can
62 to 65.
Hey, Matt.
Yeah.
What's the name of the product?
Terplock Box.
Terplock?
Terplock.
Yeah, and don't forget, they also have these new Terplock bags that are kind of like the self-regulating. So you get it pretty close, and then you put it in the bags, and if there's excess humidity in there, evidently it lets them escape.
Interesting.
But they're one way, right? And they're also heat sealable. So it can last up to 2 years.
And they're big too, right?
They come in all different sizes. They come in like little personal size, and they come in like pound sizes.
I've never tried them, but...
I've never tried them either.
Get them to send us free samples.
Sell them homegrown.
I think I already have some.
Oh.
But you know, I'm just so used to the old school method, and I've got such a tactile feel in my hand with my olfactory senses. That you
it's
know,
a touch smell
between cracking it and then smoking it, you know,
it's
you,
a process.
I can tell it's like when you're cooking the pasta, right? You don't wait until the full 9 minutes is done to taste it, because then if it's too late. What you do is you taste it a minute early,
right?
And then when you taste it, I instantly know, does it need 30 seconds more? Does it need 60 seconds more? So it's like with the weed, as soon as I taste it, I know what needs to be done to finish it off.
Well, you've got a fine palate. You know, and not everybody has a palate like that.
It's experience.
I understand.
So, okay, next question. Marcus Clementine, a grow enthusiast, wants to know, you've mentioned previously about curing cannabis. Can you explain how curing cannabis is different from just plain drying and why it is necessary?
Well, I mean, drying, you can dry it to dust. You don't want that. Curing is more of a process to make it, it breaks down chemically. As it ages, it changes.
Chlorophyll converts into cannabinoids.
Exactly.
Sugars.
Yeah.
Starches are removed.
The carbs disappear.
Right. And, well, curing and drying are completely separate processes.
Curing is a really whole long process.
So drying is removing water at a rate that is like, okay.
Well, it can be really curing, any rate, right?
Curing is when you have brought the flower or material to a state that it's ready for use. You can use it. And so then what you do is you cure it to maintain the optimal quality over a long period of time.
Yeah.
That and you improve the smokeability tremendously. So you have to dry properly before you can cure. And
otherwise, the cure is pointless.
And it's necessary to improve the smokeability, to remove the starches and the chlorophyll.
Yeah.
And done right, now there's different levels. I call it an intense cure. There's a mild cure or an intense cure. And that's the difference between how much moisture you leave in the flower. You know, if you can leave a full 2% moisture in the flower and put it in the jar, you may have to burp it once or twice, but then when you're done, you leave it in there for 6 months, it pops
you're
like
good.
A champagne bottle.
Yeah.
And that's because everything's been converted, the gases in, the curing gases is what gives you that intense cure.
Yeah.
So there are levels to curing.
There are. Well, it's also because the plant matter ages, like you say, and changes.
Okay, next question. Devin Black. Hey, Kyle, I have heard you talking about strains. Yeah, we got to stop talking about strains and cultivars. How long is it going to take before we stop saying strain and start saying cultivar?
Forever.
Is it my responsibility?
No, you call it whatever the hell you want to call it. Strains or cultivars?
Yeah. Strains are viruses and has no definition in botany, but we're just so used to it for so long.
Yeah.
It's like indica and sativa. I don't think we're going to stop saying that for decades.
No, that's going to take a long way.
Okay, one for you. Cultivar so strong it strains your lungs.
Bada boom.
Bada boom.
Yeah, what he said.
Even your phone did it for me.
Okay, back to Devin Black. Hey, Kyle, I have heard you talking about strains. What should I consider when deciding which cannabis strains to grow? Any recommendations for a first timer? I have a great recommendation for a first timer, and I'm glad I have somebody else here to.
Hopefully validate your choice.
Blue Dream.
It wouldn't be the first one I would pick, but that's reliable, for sure. I would have gone for a GDP, Granddaddy Purple.
Oh, yeah. Well, it all depends on whether you're a daytime smoker or a nighttime smoker.
Well, my problem is I'm omnivorous. I smoke from dawn till dusk. My tolerance break is when I'm asleep, essentially.
He's omnivorous and I'm an ambivert.
And I do a lot of edibles as well. I'll have a brownie before I go to bed to help me sleep through the night.
Mm-hmm.
So it really doesn't matter particularly for me, but the GDP is pretty bulletproof.
He's right.
And also an old skunk.
So
skunk
is the grape ape.
One.
Grape ape, you literally, it was grown by the ocean. It's PM resistant, everything. And you know, it's to me, there's really only two kinds of weed. There's daytime weed and there's nighttime weed. You know?
Yeah.
There's the one that rings your bell during the day and the one that rings the night. Ding, ding.
I remember when I got my first medical prescription on Venice Beach. Because this was years ago.
Come in. You know, they'd be out there on the roller skates.
Yeah, hustling you. So the doctor who interviewed me said, well, only smoke after dark. Like I had to be a vampire or some shit. It was really funny. But it's an appropriate advice, you know?
And that was like the first time that I gave some strawberry cough to one of my trimmers and told her, don't go home and smoke this. Save it for the morning. And the next day she came back to work to trim some more. And she said, you were right, Kyle. She said, I stayed up all night painting my kitchen. She's like, I put the kids to bed. And I wanted to try some weed and I couldn't go to bed.
Oh, shoot.
Yeah. So you gotta be appropriate. So why are you growing the weed predominantly? Is it to relieve anxiety? Is it to get you out of the house in the morning? You know, that's what should be considered.
Or just to get high.
And so basically the great thing is, you know, Homegrown Cannabis Co. doesn't just sell really reliable seeds. They also have an amazing compendium of what strain is a beginner strain or an intermediate strain or an expert strain. And that's really what you want to know. So you don't want an intermediate or an expert strain. You want a beginner strain, something that is bulletproof, and decide whether you want to grow an indica dominant or a sativa dominant. Or a hybrid.
A hybrid. And there are more than enough hybrids to go around. that is for sure.
Us old guys, like I said, it's like one or the other. It's like, you know, sometimes I grow a smorgasbord.
Yep.
Or sometimes I get weed from a friend, like from Josh Wax or something. Mm-hmm. And so I have hybrid. And I do use it as like a crossover between morning and right, yeah, as if like it's yeah. got some of each
sort of
in
a
it.
Segue.
Right, it's a segue. It's the aperitif of the cannabis world, or something.
Right, something like that.
I don't know. It's funny. So, okay, where are we here? I have to. Those are our recommendations for a first time.
Yeah.
Next question, Liam Hughes, an aspirant grower, aspirant.
I think tomato tomato.
Yeah.
Probably.
Okay. Good. Then I said it right either way. I said it right both times. Could you guys break down the basic steps of the drying and curing process? I'm confused about how and when to transition from one phase to another. I think we pretty much did that. It's about you can't timing. Begin to cure until you dry properly. So you want to have as close to an optimal environment if you can augment it or need to. We discussed the parameters for that. Excuse me. And then the transition is it ready for smoking? And that's going to tell you that you're ready for curing. So that's your interim, transitioning from one to the other. So I think we pretty much answered that one.
And it takes time. You're not going to get it instantaneously. It takes time and experience to really get it right.
Right. And so what I said about, you know, there's different levels of curing. Mm-hmm. So in the beginning, don't aspire to get that intense cure I'm talking about. Right? Just put it in the jar and use smaller jars if you'd like. Right. Break it up several times so that, you know that there's a little spring in there. Mm-hmm. And so you're not going to ruin it. You may not cure it as intensely, but then when you open that first jar and it smells good, you can take a week to smoke that jar, take a couple of days, and then open up the next one.
Yep.
And you just check that one. If you smell candy, you're good to go. If you smell a little ammonia,
I like that candy ammonia analogy.
Right? If then you have a 12th jar that could end up being easily cured several weeks, you know, that you haven't opened it, and then you can see if you did a 2-week cure or more. And that's a good way to get to that level where you've got 2-week cured weed, but you've checked it, you know, to make sure. Question, Faye Winter, a passionate grower.
I think we're all passionate. If you grow cannabis, you've got to be passionate about it.
Some more than others.
True, but you know, certainly speaking from my own life, it's been an obsession.
Do you know what I find about cannabis is that, so now I'm an old grower, and I'm not quite as passionate as I was. Meaning, I used to foliar feed 5 times a day, and I used to—
You get tired.
But what is still true is, what I find about all cannabis growers is, it makes you passionate about other parts of your life.
Yeah.
When you start
just start growing cannabis, you start eating better, or you start wanting other parts of your life to be more, to be better, to be healthier.
And equilibrium, I've heard. They call it homeostasis.
Homeostasis. You start searching for it in other ways.
Yeah. Yep.
It's very cool.
And that may be with exercise or, like you say, diet or just your relationships. It's just, it brings a certain peace to you.
So this passionate grower, Faye Winter, says, or asks, aside from drying and curing, what is one common mistake you see home growers make and how can it be avoided?
Cutting too early.
Oh, yes, the dreaded. I just got some pictures the other day from a friend on my phone saying it's outdoors. I always am afraid of mold. Should I pick it?
Yep.
And I saw it and I was like, I can't tell nothing. I said, you have to look at the trichomes.
Get the microscope.
You got to look at the trichomes and you need to have a calendar. You see, outdoors, you can't even use it. You don't know how many days they've actually been flowering.
Well, that's the thing. And, you know, outdoor for me, because I live in the PNW, is a short season. We grow autos. I mean, I've got some regular things that are outside.
So what you're saying is you might be pulling it in before optimal.
Yeah, you have to because you get bud rot, you get black mold, you know, botrytis.
Okay, so indoors, you know, when you have a flowering time, mm-hmm. that's a good rough guide. And it's really good to know because within 7 or 10 days of that is when you can start looking at the trichomes.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
And get yourself a simple photo loop, magnifier loop, jeweler's loop.
Real cheap.
I like 100 times personally.
You could probably get one on your phone.
Yeah.
It's probably an app for it or something.
And the trichomes, obviously, seems everybody knows, starts off looking like glass.
Yeah.
Clear tubes with a mushroom head, and they're all clear.
Yep.
And then they'll become milky.
Milky, cloudy.
Tubes, and then the heads will become cloudy. And then if you wait a little bit longer, now, you have to make sure that when you're checking close to harvest time, that you check places on the flower that you haven't either accidentally rubbed or checked to look at or squeezed previously. You have to find an other side of the nug, middle nug, and you get in there and you look at it, and you need to see a couple of amber trichome heads.
Yeah,
I like 5 to 10%.
For harvesting?
For optimal harvesting indoors, I like to see a good number of amber heads.
I go to like 30 to 40%.
Really?
Yeah.
See, this is patience, people.
But not always. Also, I run by my own calendar, what I have to pull in, because I have been running a perpetual harvest. So things are always changing.
The old perpetual harvest. Now that is a genius trick. You know what that
means? It's an awesome thing.
It means you've got 4 rows of plants, okay? And every 2 weeks,
basically.
Okay. Every 2 weeks, you can harvest and put another one in there.
Yep.
And so then by the time you're done with 4 weeks, 2 weeks more, 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks.
You're constantly cutting and trimming.
Right. You're constantly cutting and trimming.
And it's tiring.
How satisfying. Well.
But you know what? I got
I'd hire some
15
elves.
Jars of big jars.
I'd hire some elves.
They're hard to find.
Some Keebler elves.
Yeah, hard I to know. Find.
Well, that's good. So,
anything else?
I didn't give what is one common mistake you see home growers make.
Oh.
Rushing it is really a thing, and rushing it by either overfeeding or overwatering, you know?
Yep.
It's the same thing. You got to be patient. Learn how to cycle your plants.
Just because you want to project what you want that plant to do, it's not going to do it.
No. The good growers are always have patience, or they learn patience.
they get beat down by the plant.
And you learn to what I used to call speak the language of the plant.
Yeah.
And that is learn the pace of the plant. Because that plant, no matter what you do, is going to take 60, 55, 45, 60, 70, whatever day, nights to mature. No matter how fast you feed it, no matter, you know, it's going to
take... It's got its own plan.
Yeah, it's got its own plan. So learn how to cycle, wet to dry, and that'll build up a really good root structure during veg. And you don't do it quite to the extreme in flowering. You don't want your oil pressure to get low when you have heavy weight in your plant. You want to keep the water up in the plant.
The pressure, right?
But learning how to water and...
That's important. Because also you don't want excess water, so you get gnats, and your garden has zero bugs.
And your plants won't feed properly. If you don't let them eat the food that you've given them and constantly put more food on top of uneaten food, that's where the pH problem happens. Yeah. That's where the lockup, lockout problem happens. Yeah. Yeah. And so that's a pretty good answer.
I think you're good.
Okay. All right, I think this is our last question here. From Miles Burnside.
Okay, Miles.
We all know Miles Burnside growing up. We know you. Oh, he's a passionate grower, of course. What do you know? Aside from drying and curing, what is one common mistake? Well, that's the last question.
Oh, that was a mistake? Okay, yeah, good.
No,
cool.
No, that's because there wasn't a space in between this one. So, so Miles Burnside. A curious listener poses this.
Yes.
I love these identifiers. Since we're on the topic of drying and curing, could you suggest any quick checks or signs that indicate if the buds are dried or cured correctly?
Yeah, smoke that stuff.
Smoke that shit.
I was going to say shit, but I said I'd be a good boy.
So a properly cured flower will come out of the jar at the same moisture at which you put it in there.
Yeah. Or very, very marginally decreased.
Well, it all depends. That's why I say don't leave a lot of air at the top. I like to fill it up and only leave the air in between the buds because that air eventually becomes food for the conversion of enzymes. And then once the oxygen is gone from the jar, that's when that conversion stops. And then
it's sort of like
all of the curing gases that have built up in there end up, again, preserving the flower. And that's how you get that intense cure. If you have a lot of air in there, it will dry out.
Yeah.
But if you don't, it comes out still soft.
Malleable.
Actually, softer than it was when you put it in. Mm-hmm. Because the moisture has redistributed.
Sort of permeated the plant matter.
So this is how you identify a properly cured bud. So if, when I previously said, when you put a bud in a jar and it's ready to be cured, it has to be smokable. If you really cured it really well, when you take it out, you're going to want to let it set for 15 minutes or 30 minutes.
Sort of like aging.
Not that it won't burn, but it's just because everything has redistributed and... that's how you can tell.
Well, that airing out makes it a little bit more combustible.
Is that it's now lost that exterior crisp.
Right.
But there is so little moisture in there, less than 2%, that once it hits the air, it begins to... What would be the word for, like, decanting is for wine or alcohol?
Well, it breathes.
It breathes.
It breathes.
It does.
Exactly.
Exactly. So... we are a bunch of pot snobs, aren't we?
Now, yeah. I used to make fun of pot snobs, you know, once upon a time, and now I am a freaking pot snob.
I think I just inducted him. I'm certainly a pot snob, but, you know, because, see, there really is only two types of weed. It's the weed that I'll smoke and the weed that I won't.
It won't, right, exactly. Screw indica
sativa.
There's
a lot of weed that I won't smoke.
More than I care to think about.
Well, Jay, I think we've answered all of today's questions, and I want to thank you for making the trek out to Mikasa.
This has been a blast. Thank you for breakfast.
And you've got plenty of time. You can sit in the green room, and if you're too high to drive.
I think I'm good,
I think
actually.
Too.
The fear of spousal retribution looms high.
Well, once again, thanks for coming, and again, thanks to everybody out there for listening, and... tune in to the next episode of Grow Weed at Home with Kyle Cushman.